Hello and welcome to Science World. NASA announced this week that spaceflight launches from the United States will resume and ferry U.S. astronauts to and from the International Space Station. Slava Sahok will fill us in with the details. The Ebola epidemic continues to spread across Western Africa, and some are afraid that the deadly virus could mutate so that it could be spread from person to person through the air. Jessica Berman will tell us that some experts are saying that the chances of that happening are remote. And NASA's unmanned MAVEN mission will reach Mars on Sunday, September 21st. On September 24th, a few days later, India's Mars orbital mission will also make it to the Red Planet. Stephen Booker, a research professor from the University of Michigan and a MAVEN co-investigator, joins us on our one-on-one segment today to talk about these missions and their goals. We have this and much more on today's edition of VOA Science, Health, and Technology magazine, Science World. NASA has chosen Boeing and SpaceX companies to build the next generation of spacecraft that will carry U.S. astronauts to the International Space Station by the year 2017. Slava Sahok has more.
NASA made what it calls a historic announcement at the Kennedy Space Center in Cape Canaveral, Florida, Tuesday.
Respectively, the vehicles are Boeing CST-100 and Dragon X and SpaceX's Dragon. The total potential contract value is $6.8 billion over the initial contract period. The spacecraft will launch from here at the Kennedy Space Center Cape Canaveral Launch Complex.
NASA Administrator Charles Bolden said the agency has had full support from President Barack Obama and the Congress.
From day one, the Obama administration has made it very clear that the greatest nation on Earth should not be dependent on any other nation to get into space.
Since NASA retired its space shuttle program in 2011, U.S. astronauts and equipment have traveled to the International Space Station on Russian rockets. Fare price has increased to more than $70 million per seat. Kathy Leaders, a manager of NASA's Commercial Crew Program, said Boeing was awarded $4.2 billion and SpaceX $2.6 billion for their respective vehicles.
Once NASA determines SpaceX and Boeing have met our requirements, the systems will be certified for NASA human spaceflight missions. They will then conduct at least two and up to six missions under these contracts to deliver a crew of four to the International Space Station.
The missions also will carry powered cargo and vital science experiments to the space station before returning to U.S. soil. The spacecraft also will serve as lifeboats for astronauts for up to 200 days in case of emergency. Astronaut Mike Fink said the new partnership is a great achievement, not only for NASA, but for all Americans.
The biggest thing I think that's going to really help us with the commercial program, crew program, is that we're going to have more people working aboard the International Space Station, conducting even more scientific research than we've been able to do so far. And think about that. And it gives us a capability of seven people on an ISS mission instead of just six.
NASA officials say the new program will allow them to learn more about long-duration flights, helping clear the way for the agency's greater ambition of sending people to Mars.
Today's announcement sets the stage for what promises to be the most ambitious and exciting chapter in the history of NASA and human spaceflight.
U.S. space officials say the development of the new vehicles will especially focus on the safety of crew members. Extensive safety testing and obtaining certification for manned flights are included in the cost of the vehicles. Slavica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
The long upgrade of the Large Hadron Collider is over. The scientific instrument responsible for the discovery of the so-called God particle is being brought up to speed in time for this month's 60th anniversary of the European Organization for Nuclear Research, or CERN. George Putich tells us more.
The huge particle accelerator, located in a 27-kilometer-long tunnel 100 meters underground near Geneva, Switzerland, has never run at full power. Even so, before its breakdown 18 months ago, scientists were able to detect evidence of the Higgs boson, an elusive particle whose existence proved the validity of what's called the Standard Model, a theory that explains much about the origins of the universe. But there's a lot more to discover, says CERN researcher Despina Hadzifotiadou.
These collisions produce a whole lot of new particles, and by studying these particles, we can deduce what happened in the very beginning of the collision and thus imagine what happened in the beginning of the universe.
To work at full power, the collider's electromagnets must be cooled to a temperature near absolute zero, a process which will take several months. So beginning next year, the magnets will be able to accelerate tiny clouds of subatomic particles close to the speed of light, smashing them with the energy of 14 trillion electron volts. Researcher Sudarshan Parameswaran says that will allow scientists to test new theories.
One of these theories is supersymmetry. And this predicts a whole new range of particles to look for at quite high mass. And so the extended energy that we'll get from the LHC will hopefully enable us to look for these particles and hopefully find them.
All the ordinary matter around us, including stars and planets, makes up only 5% of the universe. Physicists hope that colliding subatomic particles at higher power than ever before may finally shed light on the so-called dark matter and dark energy believed to permeate the rest of the space. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
As the Ebola epidemic continues to spread in Western Africa, some are becoming afraid that the virus could mutate and the disease could spread from person to person after becoming airborne. But some experts say the chances of that happening are remote. Jessica Berman has more.
As the number of people infected with Ebola has soared in Liberia, Sierra Leone, Guinea, Nigeria, and Senegal, with more than half of the estimated 4,300 cases resulting in death, some infectious disease specialists have expressed concern the disease could acquire a new, more terrifying mode of transmission through inhalation, much like the common flu bug. People become infected with Ebola by coming into contact with the contaminated bodily fluids, primarily blood and saliva, of infected individuals. In a New York Times opinion piece, biosecurity expert Michael T. Osterholm noted that viruses like Ebola are notoriously sloppy in replicating, which means that each new infection presents the possibility of trillions of genetic changes. Genetic mutations to bacteria and viruses are common. They are the result of small mistakes that occur in the DNA of a microbe in the course of replicating. But rarely, says Dr. Anthony Fauci, does a virus mutate to the point that it changes how it spreads from person to person. In testimony Wednesday before a U.S. Congressional Committee hearing on Ebola, Fauci, the head of the U.S. Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, commented on that possibility.
It generally, if it changes a function, modifies an already existing function. It makes it either a bit more virulent or a bit less virulent. It makes it a little bit more efficient in spreading the way it usually spreads, or a little less efficient.
Having said that, Dr. Fauci warned the longer the Ebola epidemic continues in Africa, the greater the chance the virus will acquire mutations.
If this virus keeps replicating and keeps infecting more and more people, you are going to give it more of a chance to mutate. So the best possible way that we can take that off the table is to actually shut down this epidemic.
Experimental drugs have been used in some cases to treat Ebola patients, but care is mostly supportive. In the absence of a cure, efforts continue to try to contain the virus through quarantine, limiting travel to other countries, and public curfews. The United States is sending 3,000 troops to Liberia, the nation worst hit by Ebola, to help with training medical workers, coordinating supplies, and building new treatment facilities. Other countries are donating medical supplies to try to contain what one public health official called a ferocious epidemic. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up in a few minutes, we'll hear about NASA's MAVEN unmanned mission to Mars. MAVEN, of course, is an acronym. For this week's Science World Quick Quiz, what does it stand for? A. Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution. B. Mars Accelerated Velocity Expedition. Or C. Mars Advanced Virtual Exploration. Think about it, and good luck. We'll give you the correct answer in just a few minutes from now.
This is Science World on VOA. Be sure to visit our new website and blog at voanews.com/science.
Residents and tourists here in Washington, D.C. can check out a life-size replica of a huge dinosaur that lived almost 100 million years ago in northern Africa. Science World's Philip Alexiou tells us more about this unusual prehistoric creature.
The giant animal is named Spinosaurus, and scientists say it's providing evidence that some dinosaurs were able to live on land but hunt in water. Most of the previously discovered carnivorous dinosaurs were land-based, but University of Chicago paleontologist Paul Serino says Spinosaurus was different.
From head to tail, it is showing signs of adaptation for a water-loving life. This is the first time we have solid bone evidence for this kind of a lifestyle among dinosaurs.
Scientists and technicians from the University of Chicago created a computer-aided reconstruction of a Spinosaurus skeleton that was found in Morocco. Named after its long dorsal spines, some of them over 2 meters long, Spinosaurus is also the largest known predatory dinosaur. At 15 meters, it was about 3 meters longer than the biggest Tyrannosaurus rex, which was previously thought to be the largest carnivore dinosaur. The lead project researcher, paleontologist Nazar Ibrahim, says its hind legs were probably perfectly adapted for swimming, while its forelegs were equipped with sharp claws. With crocodile-like jaws, it could grab large aquatic creatures.
It ate sharks, but it probably included all kinds of aquatic animals in its prey. And the size of these aquatic animals is probably one of the factors that drove the evolution of giant body size in Spinosaurus.
There's a scene in the 2001 film Jurassic Park 3 where a Spinosaurus fights and wins a battle with a Tyrannosaurus rex. But scientists say in reality, this was not possible because all evidence that's been uncovered so far shows that the two species lived on different continents and in different time periods. The reconstructed skeleton of Spinosaurus will eventually head back to Morocco, where it could form the centerpiece of a new museum. For Science World, I'm Philip Alexiou.
An international team of researchers investigating the ancestry of today's Europeans, along with their descendants, have found a new branch in their family tree. Science World's Bob Doty tells us more.
Scientists from the Harvard Medical School and the University of Tübingen in Germany recently examined ancient DNA and found evidence that people of European ancestry descended from at least three major and diverse groups of ancestors, including some that until now had been unrecognized. Previous genetic and archaeological research showed that present-day Europeans descended from the mix of two ancient groups of people, hunter-gatherers from Western Europe and farmers from the Near East, who brought agriculture with them to the European continent some 8,500 years ago. According to the new study, along with these two groups, a newly identified group of ancient people from northern Eurasia, who did not arrive in Europe until after the introduction of agriculture, also contributed to the genetic mix of today's Europeans. The researchers said that their studies could change current concepts of how groups of people migrating throughout the world thousands of years ago interacted with each other. To make their findings, which were just published in the journal Nature, the researchers compared 9 ancient genomes to those of modern Europeans. The researchers said that their findings indicate that significant migration of people into Europe from other parts of the world took place later than previously thought. For Science World, I'm Bob Doty.
Researchers say a relatively new test for HPV, the human papillomavirus, could replace a more invasive test to screen for cervical cancer. Health reporter Art Chimes tells us that it could be appealing for many women who avoid current screening methods.
HPV is linked to cervical cancer, and screening for cervical cancer is an invasive procedure that has required that cells be removed from the cervix and examined under a microscope. Recently, less invasive tests have been developed. Rather than look for abnormal cells on the cervix, the new tests examine a woman's urine for evidence of HPV infection in the form of DNA from the virus. Researchers from Britain and Spain analyzed 14 previous studies of the urine test. They found that the urine tests were not quite as accurate as the microscope examination, but were almost as good when the test used the first urine passed after a night's sleep. Researcher Dr. Neha Pathak of Queen Mary University of London says a good non-invasive test could encourage more women to be screened.
If you have a urine test that is as accurate as that, then it opens up the world of opportunity for these people to still be tested for cervical cancer and precancer, so they're not missing out on the treatments that are readily available.
Pathak and her colleagues published their findings in the British medical journal, the BMJ. In an editorial commenting on the study, researchers at the University of Manchester urged further research, including a study that compared results from different tests on the same woman. Meanwhile, the study's lead author, Neha Pathak, envisions a time when home-based urine tests for HPV will be available to screen for cervical cancer.
Imagine if you're in a village in the middle of nowhere, you don't have much access at all to doctors and nurses on a daily basis. It'd be fantastic if you could just put it in a pot, send it off, 2 weeks later you get told your result.
In the meantime, Pathak notes that her findings have to be interpreted with caution. But she says urine tests for HPV infection deserve to be explored, as she put it, with some priority and urgency. This is Art Chimes reporting.
Let's see if you have the correct answer to this week's Science World Quick Quiz. NASA's unmanned MAVEN mission is expected to reach its destination on Sunday the 21st. MAVEN, of course, is an acronym. We'd like to know what it stands for. Is it A, Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution, B, Mars Accelerated Velocity Expedition, or C, Mars Advanced Virtual Exploration? The answer is A, Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution. Stay tuned because one of the MAVEN mission's investigators will tell us all about this unmanned mission to Mars. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
You're listening to Science World. Our new webpage and blog can be found at voanews.com/science.
Some scientists say that Mars, billions of years ago, had a rich atmosphere and was a warm and wet world. Scientists are hoping that a new NASA probe that will reach the red planet on Sunday, September 21st, may provide some new insight about the evolution of Mars and explain how it lost its atmosphere along with its water. The space agency's new unmanned spacecraft is called the Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution, or MAVEN. A few days later, on September 24th, India's Mars Orbital Mission, or MOM, will also make it to our planetary neighbor. Professor Stephen Booker from the University of Michigan is a co-investigator with the MAVEN mission. He joins us today for our one-on-one segment to talk about the MAVEN and what valuable information it, along with India's MOM spacecraft, could provide scientists here on Earth. Professor Booker, what is MAVEN and what are the goals of its mission?
MAVEN is a mission and a long line of NASA missions to investigate Mars and to derive answers about the Mars climate and its history. We basically want to know where the water went on Mars. There's a lot of surface features that suggest that water must have flowed on the surface quite a long time ago, and that water can either go underground or it can be lost to space. and several of the missions before MAVEN have looked at the sequestration of water in the soil or the regolith at Mars and what might be underground. And this is the first mission to evaluate how water and other elements, molecules and atoms, might be lost from the top of the atmosphere. So this is an atmospheric mission. Our immediate goals are to determine how the upper atmosphere is connected to the solar wind that goes by Mars and how that upper atmosphere gets stripped away and lost from the planet, and to measure that quantitatively. And once we have answers to how that happens in the present day, the thought is that we can run our computer models, our numerical models, run them backwards in time and predict what might have happened to the climate before the present day. We can't do much about that until we understand what's going on at the present time. And so that's the major theme of the MAVEN mission.
Professor, you just mentioned that the sun may have played a role in stripping away Mars' early atmosphere. Can you elaborate on how the sun was able to do that?
The sun has a wind called a solar wind that's composed of particles and magnetic fields that come out from the sun. And we just had a solar storm, in fact, not too awful long ago. We have the aurora in the Earth's atmosphere right now that are fairly brilliant. And these same particles and magnetic fields also flow out to Mars, and their interaction with the upper atmosphere strips it away. And these storms happen periodically, so these episodic events strip more or less material away from the upper atmosphere, and it's thought that these storms were more prevalent in the past and of larger intensity, so they might have been more efficient and it's stripping away the atmosphere. So in previous times, this might have been a much stronger process, the stripping away, than at present.
Let's talk a little about the MAVEN spacecraft itself and its onboard equipment. How will it go about gathering data that could provide some insight into the evolution of Mars' atmosphere?
MAVEN has 8 instruments and 3 instrument packages, and its orbit is key into the sampling of the upper atmosphere and the solar wind environment. It has a very elliptical orbit, so it gets as close as about 150 kilometers on average, and out to a few Mars radii, which is a few thousand kilometers. And this elliptical orbit, this oval orbit, samples close in the upper atmosphere of Mars when it's close to the planet, and it samples far away from the planet or in the solar wind when it's at the opposite end of the orbit. And this whole orbit precesses or changes its orientation around Mars with time and allows us to sample day side versus night side, polar regions, and so on. And part of the time you'll be sampling close in and looking at the ions and the neutrals of the upper atmosphere. And part of the time you'll be sampling far out in the solar wind and looking at the particles and the magnetic fields and their structure. So it's the combination of these two that will allow us to evaluate the status of the upper atmosphere of Mars and how it's being stripped away. These instruments come in packages. The particles and fields package is a solar wind package, if you will. There's a neutral gas ion mass spectrometer that samples the low-down atmosphere, the neutrals, and the ions. And there's a remote instrument, an imaging ultraviolet spectrometer, that looks at things along the limb. It looks through the atmosphere and looks down on the atmosphere from high up. So it's a combination of close-in, far-out, and this remote instrument that I just mentioned.
Professor, along with MAVEN reaching Mars, India's Mars Explorer mission, which was also launched last November, is right behind the MAVEN spacecraft and should reach the Red Planet a couple of days after MAVEN. Now, what can you tell us about India's mission to Mars?
Its orbit is quite a bit more elliptical than that of MAVEN. It gets no closer than about 340 kilometers and goes out to about 80,000 kilometers, much, much further out than Mars. So it's planned to study the high atmosphere, called the exosphere, a very high portion of the atmosphere. And they also have an instrument on board that will look for methane. And methane is controversial at Mars. Its detection is controversial, I should say, and this instrument would help confirm those observations if they're real and possibly detect where these plumes or clouds of methane are coming from and maybe able to say something about the mechanisms for the methane release.
So India's Mars Explorer, among other things, will also be investigating parts of the Mars atmosphere too.
Yeah, they're complementary in their instrument payload, and they do quite a bit different things, but together they give a broader and better picture of the atmosphere and what's going on there.
That was Stephen Booker, a research professor of atmospheric, oceanic, and space sciences at the University of Michigan. He's also a co-investigator with the MAVEN mission. That's it for this edition of Science World. We'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog, voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I am Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.